You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. Today is March 9th, 2018. It is Friday. I'm your host, Lucas Han. You can follow me on Twitter at Lucas J. Han. You can read my articles on my blog, ClipsNation.com, as well as follow along on Twitter at ClipsNationSBN. Today, as I alluded to in yesterday's show, I'm talking with Chris Manning of the Locked On Cavaliers podcast and FearTheStore.com. So Chris and I are colleagues not only on the Locked On Podcast Network, but also on the SB Nation blog network, where we've known each other and worked together for quite some time. So don't have much to say really leading into this. It's a little bit over a half hour of me and Chris just talking about the Clippers, the Cavaliers, Western and Eastern Conference playoff races, what to expect in this game tonight, the trajectory of both teams. So I think it's a really good, fun conversation. I think you guys will really enjoy it, as well as enjoying Chris's perspective.
Hi, I'm Chris Manning from Locked On Cavaliers.
And I'm Lucas Han, host of Locked On Clippers.
So this is another Locked On Cavs, Locked On Clippers crossover. We're here, also SB Nation crossover as well, because Lucas is with Clips Nation. I'm with FearTheStore.com. I'm talking about Friday's Cavs-Clippers game, where two teams that are in the going through different things. The Cavs are obviously implementing all these new pieces in the middle of a long road trip. We're recording this slightly before the Cavs play the Nuggets on Wednesday, so we don't know the result of that first game. So just keep that in mind as you listen to this. But
go Cavs!
Yes, Lucas. Let's start with that. What the Clippers right now, 9th seed in the West as we record this, right behind the Denver Nuggets, and in the middle of that jam-packed bottom of the Western Conference race. How do you feel about that team's chances of making it into the playoffs this season?
Oh, I think the Clippers, it's probably like maybe a coin flip, really. It's just so congested in the Western Conference right now. Minnesota has 28 losses, but they're sliding with Jimmy Butler out. San Antonio has 27 losses. They're 3-7 in their last 10. Oklahoma City, Denver, and the Clippers all at 29 losses. Utah at 30 losses. It's just so tight. I can never remember seeing it this congested. Not, I mean, you know, you end up with 7, 8, 9 races, whatever, but from 3 to 10, within a few losses of each other for over a month, it's just been insane. So I mean, I don't really feel like there's any safe bets. I think maybe the safest team to actually make it is Oklahoma City, just because they have the top end talent to play 42 minutes a night and win the regular season games they need at the end to get in. But everyone else, I feel like there's a legitimate chance of everyone else making it in or out, which is, you know, part of what makes it so exciting.
Yeah, pulling up the 538 odds real quick, it's interesting because the Wolves, even with the sliding they've mentioned, missing the guy who's their second best player and just so vital to what they were doing, they have a 91% chance of making the playoffs.
Does it consider that that Jimmy Butler's not going to play again, though? I think that this projection, like this 91%, is assuming that Minnesota is going to be as good in their last 20 games as they were in their first 60.
Yeah, that's a worthwhile point.
I think they probably were the safest team before that Jimmy Butler, before Jimmy Butler got injured, but. Yeah, I mean, I think Portland probably feels okay right now because they're well-balanced, too. Mm-hmm. New Orleans is playing well, but, you know, they're just all Anthony Davis. And I think I had a crossover podcast last week with Adam Mares from Locked On Nuggets, and we were talking about this, and we kind of agreed if Anthony Davis misses 4 games with a sprained ankle, the Pelicans are losing those 4 games.
Which is very possible. Like, that's a guy that he had an injury scare, like, 2 nights ago or whatever.
He had an injury scare against the Clippers with those bruised ribs. You know, someone made the comment that Anthony Davis should just rest against the Clippers because it feels like he's gotten injured 4 or 5 times against them. But I mean, I think he's gotten injured multiple times against every team. Like, it seems like, you know, as far as just getting banged up, he gets banged up once a week. We hear Anthony Davis heading back to the locker room quite frequently. And this is, you know, not to make light of a guy who's having injury issues, but you look at him playing these massive minutes, shouldering this massive workload. The phenomenal last 5 weeks that he's had, can he do it for 5 more weeks? Physically, is he capable of sustaining it for 5 more weeks? I'm not sold. Adam seemed pretty confident that he would not be able to. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of risk there with all of these teams. San Antonio, you know, who knows? You never count San Antonio out. But yeah, that pack, New Orleans, San Antonio, Minnesota, Denver, the Clippers, Utah, all of these teams I think have arguments for and against them making in. I don't think there's really a ton of separation in that group. So it's honestly, it's super exciting. Night in and night out, there were really, really compelling games.
Are you surprised at all that the Clippers have stayed into this race considering they traded Blake? And obviously that wasn't right at the deadline, but they traded Blake Griffin, who was their best player, and are left kind of with a lot of guys that I think are good NBA players, or at least solid NBA players, but no one that is, you know, an overwhelming star or, you know, like a guy that you would say, okay, even if this guy gets the chances to shine, maybe he could turn into something good. Or not even someone like Victor Oladipo, who ended up in this new situation and really blossomed. So are you surprised that with teams that have, you know, more star players, like the Nuggets have Jokic, the Jazz, you know, don't really have that, but they have Gobert, and the Wolves have Towns, and the Thunder have who they have with Russ and Paul and Melo. Are you surprised that they've stuck near the end of the West right now?
No, I don't think. I think from when they made the trade till now, I'm not really surprised with what they've done. I was surprised that they were where they were when they made the trade because of the injuries that they had. They survived a whole month without Blake Griffin and Danilo Gallinari and Milos Teodosic. So, it doesn't necessarily surprise me that Milos comes back, Gallo comes back temporarily, you know, as always. And you bring in Tobias Harris and Avery Bradley. He has only three games. But, yeah, it doesn't surprise me that this group plus Tobias Harris has been fine, because they were fine without Blake Griffin before they got Tobias for Blake Griffin. I'm more surprised that they're in the playoff race when you take into account their December and January, really, than I am based on, you know, their February and so on March. I think they've shown that they just have this ensemble scoring with, you know, with Rivers, with Lou Williams, Gallinari, Tobias Harris, Montrezl Harrell scoring and insane of consistency. And, you know, they put up 120 points. Like, if you just look at their recent games, four kinds of these recent games, 116, 123, 128-92 on the second night of back-to-back against Houston, but then before that, 122, 128, 127, 129, 114, they just score. They're like scoring literally 120 points a night since the trade, or something in that range. So yeah, it's not surprising to me that they've stayed somewhat in the playoff race. I think it's been I think it's been what's expected, but you know, that isn't necessarily good enough to get them in at the end of the day.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, you're right, about where they were at and what they did. And you know, we know from reporting on both sides, people covering both teams that are covering the league, that they were close to trading DeAndre as well. And, you know, maybe if Avery Bradley wasn't having this injury that team seemed to know more about than we did, obviously, he might have been someone they would have flipped to. I mean, there was a lot of speculation that they might flip him after acquiring him. Let's rehash the DeAndre stuff. I mean, the Cavs, I think, are frankly better off from not getting DeAndre and getting what they got. I think if they had given up that package for DeAndre and the Clippers had been willing to take it, I don't think getting DeAndre would have really helped as much, because I don't know if you can make the other deals. You know, maybe you could still make all these other deals and give up other stuff and other picks and what have you, but I think Nance has been, you know, obviously very, very good. I'm not sure that Jordan would have provided that same type of thing, and maybe him and Nance would have been better than him and Thompson. I think it's worth debating. But I think in a vacuum, if you're saying the Cavs do the DeAndre deal and they maybe can't do the Lakers deal, I think they're kind of better off having not got DeAndre. But I also get why they went after him. When you look back at this, were you surprised that this didn't go? A, were you surprised all this didn't go down? And two, did you think what the Cavs were asking, were willing to give up for DeAndre, was reasonable, or was it something, okay, like, you get why the Clippers didn't do it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is something that we had talked about. Not, I don't think we did a podcast, but I think it's just something that you and I messaged about.
Yeah, we had like traded like some Slack or DMs and kind of like talk about this.
Yeah, I think kind of what we agreed on was that what the Clippers were asking for, it made a lot of sense for the Cavs to not do it. And what the Cavs were asking for, it made a lot of sense for the Clippers to not do it. So, I mean, you know, Cleveland obviously was very insistent on not trading the Brooklyn pick, which I think if I was running the Cavaliers, I would have not traded the Brooklyn pick, especially not for DeAndre Jordan. I mean, I love DeAndre, but we're not talking about bringing in like a Paul George level piece here. And I think from the Clippers' perspective, there just wasn't really anything on the roster that on the Cavaliers roster that would make you entertain a DeAndre package or, you know, sending DeAndre out except for the Brooklyn pick. Whatever combination of bad contracts, even if you took, you know, you don't throw in Tristan, which is the worst contract of the bunch, but you do like Shumpert and Channing Frye's expiring and Cleveland's own first round pick. I feel about that. You commit to paying Shumpert $11 million next season. You get a pick in the late 20s in a draft when you're already going to have two picks in the like probably the top 15. So, yeah, I think it was a situation where it made, you know, the fit in general, DeAndre to Cleveland, made sense. It was what Cleveland needed. The Clippers were in a selling mode. But I think when you looked at the pieces that were on the table, there wasn't really a trade that made sense for both sides. I think both sides probably did right to pass on it. Obviously, Cleveland feels a little better about it because, as you said, Cleveland did quite well at the trade deadline. The Clippers ended up, you know, not having a deal to make because basically anywhere that they were looking, teams wanted the Clippers to take back long-term salary, and they were reluctant to give back, you know, really substantial assets in terms of prospects or picks. So I think based on what, you know, my understanding of the situation, I agree with the Clippers' decision to stand pat with DeAndre. Obviously, it would have been nice if they could have moved him for something good, but I just don't think that the right deal that made the team significantly better was out there.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. And again, I think the Cavs with maybe having to pay DeAndre and all that, and not wanting to take on the Tristan the contract was, I think, kind of the difference there. And maybe JR as well. We know that was out there, but I think Tristan, considering the position, and looking for the Clippers, I get it. Not wanting to take that on. I mean, Tobias Harris is on a pretty reasonable contract. Avery Bradley, expiring contract. DeAndre, if things they decide they want to tear it down this summer, just let DeAndre walk. And it's also a market where there's not a lot of money. We already sort of know that there's just not a lot of money for these guys, and it's going to be them, especially in a position that is a little bit, you know, different now at center. It's going to be hard for, I imagine, DeAndre to get a ton of money. So and the Cavs are going to see that with Rodney Hood and Larry Nance to an extent as well. We'll flip to the Cavs here. The Cavs come into this game, again, pre-Nuggets game, so unsure of how that comes out. But all these new pieces, going to be in L.A. for 3 days. One game against the Clippers, one game against the Lakers. Just in terms of the type of team the Cavs are going to see, what are they getting in facing the Clippers on Friday night?
The Clippers are a high-scoring team. So this is what I talked about before and what I've been talking about quite a bit lately, is that the Clippers really don't have much chance of winning games where the final score is like below 110. Like, they aren't going to win games 102-95. They don't play defense well enough to do that. The defense is abysmal, to be honest. And because they don't have really a star scorer who's going to go off for 40 or 50, like Lou Williams might do it once a season, but he's not going to do it Steph Curry, James Harden style. So, you know, LeBron James style, for example. So the Clippers have trouble reaching, like against the Warriors, they scored like 125 points, but they let in, you know, 140 or something like that. I think right in like that 115 to 120 spot is their sweet spot, which is insanely high. Like, that's a lot of points. But that's what you can probably expect from any game with the Clippers, unless Cleveland really controls the pace and locks down defensively, which, you know, I don't think is something that this team is going to do.
Yeah, the defensive stuff is not their MO. This, in a way, could be a test of what they look like. No, Tristan certainly impacts that. I think Nance has done a very good job against guys like DeAndre, but you know, he did well against Drummond. But you know, does that change a little bit in this game? Because in the lobs, does he have an issue with the lob? It's going to be interesting to see. And if they are scoring that much, that kind of could, if we get a shoot on LA, that's going to be interesting in its own right.
Yeah, I mean, I think it will. Most of the Clippers games have turned into shootouts. The only game really that hasn't been a shootout lately was, again, that game, second night of back-to-back against the Houston Rockets. But I mean, the Cavaliers, you know, it's funny. We're so used to not caring about Cleveland in the regular season. Like, year after year, it's like, oh, Cleveland is going to win the East. And last year, they ended up losing the one seed, but then still, of course, coming out of the Eastern Conference. this year just has, I mean, to me, it's felt different. Like, it's felt different, right? This year has been, it hasn't been like a comfortable coasting. It's been like a struggle to, do you, is that the vibe, the same vibe, like close to the team every day watching the games night in, night out?
You know, I think I'm of two minds in this, because I think the talking about the struggle, and I think there is some uncomfortability. You can just see that at times they're overthinking things. You can see at times that they're just not really together as a group. At the same time, you set the vibe around this team is just so much better than it was pre-deadline, right? Yeah. Like, I think with the IT stuff, just how weird all of that was, just some of the tension that you could feel. I mean, I think Wade, there was some friction there as well. Didn't he seem like he didn't really gel with everyone in that locker room? I think all the new blood sort of makes it hard for me to say that things are bad. I think, that there is any sort of freak out, because I think that it's just, it's such a more relaxed setting. Nance has, I think, just been so good that I think he's kind of just really hidden some holes, and I think Hill's just not been as bad as he hasn't been blowing the doors off anybody, but he's been George Hill. You know, I think this is just a group still trying to find its identity. I think it's so early in this run. They're using a lot of different lineups. The second best player has been out the whole time. Remember, Kevin Love has not played a single game with the new players yet. We don't know when that's going to be, but you're talking about a guy that's going to provide floor spacing, rebounding, you know, play some minutes at the four or the five. And Tristan Thompson is now out as well. And I think all of these things just kind of make me think, you know, we don't really know what this Cavs team is going to be. I've made the argument that if they bring back, let's say, most of the guys that they have. So let's say LeBron resigns in July. Kevin comes back. They bring back Nance, Hood. Maybe they do something with Clarkson's salary and do some sort of deal and bring in one other guy to either, you know, move Hill to the bench or some other wing star, and then they get a cheap backup mortgage. Let's say they just, like, slightly alter the roster. I don't think this group's going to feel fully comfortable with each other until next year. I think right now it's a lot of on-the-fly work. It's a lot of LeBron being great and Larry Nance just playing the best basketball of his career. I really think that right now it's just not the optimized version, and it doesn't help that NBA teams just don't practice a lot, right? Like, the NBA teams do not have the time to be like a high school team and practice four times a week and work on sets and get conditioned. Like, it's just a lot more hectic, and I think it's why it's so hard to do the overhaul that Cavs did and then be good right away. It's one of the reasons I think you have to be skeptical about where this team could go this season, just because there's just not a lot of time for them to kind of bring it all together, especially, again, when you've had injuries.
Yeah, I mean, the Clippers, Doc Rivers, you know, is a coach that's famous for never practicing. Like, they'll go 6 weeks at a time without practicing because the Clippers have had some pretty old rosters over the years, you know, relatively speaking to NBA standards. And they just don't, you know, they're not going to practice when they have one game off between days. They're just not going to do it. And you don't get 2 or 3 day breaks very often. So we talked, you know, I kind of mentioned earlier that I feel like Oklahoma City is the team in the West in this pack that I think is kind of safe because they have that higher gear that I think they can click it into that the other teams in that pack can't really reach. But so, you know, in the East, there's kind of a similar congestion. Cleveland 37-26, Washington, Indiana, Philly, all right behind them, just two losses behind. I don't think Cleveland has it in them in the next month to do something crazy and pass Toronto or Boston and get a top two seed. But do you think that they, at least with what they have right now, you know, they aren't, you're totally right about not getting a chance to gel. And it's something that will affect them, I think. But do you think they have that gear in them right now where when it comes down to it, they'll be able to flip on the switch, get some separation from four through six, and get out of the first round, you know, without much trouble? Do you feel like, what's your confidence meter on Cleveland being able to put it together enough to get the three seed and get out of the first round without a lot of trouble?
No lie, I think they're going to go through some roughness. I think the defense is, I think, not going to... It's a lot better, but it's not fixed. I think they're probably headed in this position where... I think if you just look at the NBA standings right now, which I'm gonna look up, but I think you're right about them not passing Boston or Toronto. I think they're very. Yeah, they're, I mean,
they're six losses back of Boston, not
which,
back of Toronto.
Yeah, which is crazy. So, but they're ahead of Washington. They're ahead of the Pacers, ahead of the Sixers, ahead of the Bucks, ahead of the Heat. They just lost to Philly, and Philly certainly had. I think that's a series that, in a way, it might be good for them because I think they'd win that series, right? Like, I think come playoff time, LeBron's going to be LeBron. They'll have Love back and no offense to Dario Saric, Love's going to dominate Dario Saric in that series, I think. Just a lot better player at this point in their respective careers. At the very least, like, Love is going to be a problem offensively for Saric and defense. I think if they get the Bucks, the Pacers, if they get some team in that range, whoever it is, as the 3 seed, I think they can probably get a series that's going to make them work in the first round, but not something that's going to cause them to completely fall apart or lose or get upset. I think out of the two teams at the top, I think Boston is sort of the ideal opponent in the second round because I'm not convinced Boston, at this iteration of Boston, with no Hayward and kind of guys up front that I don't know how they're going to handle the Cavs' bigs, I think the Cavs should feel good about that series. I think Toronto is playing very good. They've been incredible this season. I'm very curious to see how the Cavs would match up with them later this month and then in the playoffs possibly. But you know, I think it could be LeBron's toughest road to the finals and through the East. But I think that they still probably end up getting there. But I also do need to see more. And I think it'd be a little bit intellectually dishonest to say, yes, 100% the Cavs are getting through. I think just because it's new guys, it's you know, no Kyrie, it's all these different factors, and the defense still isn't great all the time, and you know, Love's coming off an injury and all these things. I think you have to look at them with some more skepticism than you might have if this was just them running back the same group that lost in the finals last year. Like, I mean, even I think if they had come into this season, not made any trades, basically just came back with the same roster, maybe added Wade, and Wade's still here, right? I think you probably look at them and say, yeah, you know, their defense is really bad and there's all these issues, but they're probably just going to wreck shop again. We'd probably be a lot more, had have been a lot more chill about them. But because it's new guys around LeBron, there's 4 guys left from the title team, I think there's reason to be kind of skeptical about what they do.
Yeah, and I think it's a really interesting conversation because it could very well be that, you know, they've basically got a month and then the first round before they've got to play either Boston or Toronto, right? So, I mean, I think it could very well be that if they have some speed bumps, if they have some struggle in the next 6 weeks, it could better prepare them for a tougher series against Boston and Eastern Conference final series against Toronto. Because if it's easy and they beat up on some bad teams, they might never figure out the things that they need to figure out. But, you know, I think it's a situation where because they have such a short time to learn so much and gel so much as a team with all the new guys, it could very, very much be to their advantage in the long run to struggle in the short term. Instead of getting away with wins when you play badly and lose and be frustrated and figure some stuff out. I mean, that's really, really interesting. You know, not to put you on the spot, but I do want to know do you think if you had to pick right now, you had to put money down, are we going to get Cavs Warriors again? Or do you think on either side that someone is going to usurp?
I think they get there, but I think if a team beats them, it's Toronto. Like, yeah, I would feel, just because I think DeRozan's playing at such a high level, because of the type of guys they have. I think they're a team that could really make LeBron have to work on defense a lot. You know, I am very curious about all of this, but I at the same time, you know, I think the Cavs should probably end up being okay. But I think I think if one of those two teams are going to beat them, I think it would be Toronto. I don't view Boston quite as much of a threat. I don't know how you feel about it, and I'd love to get your take on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think Boston is interesting, but I think if they had Gordon Hayward for the full season of him being together, and if he was going to be there for the playoffs, it would be a much, much different conversation.
How good is the East going to be next year, by the way? Just really think about this. Let's just a quick note on this. Hayward back with Boston. Let's say LeBron comes back to the Cavs. That's going to be a really good team because it has LeBron. He's still very, very good. Toronto should still probably be very good. Maybe drops off a little bit. Year two.
Philly keeps growing.
You know, Giannis, Jabari. Maybe
Chris Middleton.
They'll actually get a competent coach. you know, East could be pretty interesting next year.
Yeah,
at least
I mean,
top four
it's
or five
about
teams.
Time. It's about time that you guys were competitive.
Like, yeah.
We've been over here with 48 win teams making the playoffs, and you guys have had under 500 7 and 8 seeds. But yeah, I mean, even Detroit should be better next year, I think. I think it's just going to be hard for them over the course of 82 games to struggle as much as they've struggled lately. But we'll see. I mean, this was the year a lot of people were saying beforehand that the East was going to be stronger, and early on it looked like they were. And now I think, I think there two teams are going to make it in the West that are better than Miami, or two teams are going to miss it in the West that are better than Miami. I really think, like, if the playoffs started today and the Clippers and the Jazz were out, I think the Clippers and the Jazz are both better than the Heat. So, I mean, and, you know, this is something we probably don't have time to get fully into, but just the idea of 1 through 16 seeding, which of course will never actually be implemented because Eastern Conference owners would have to agree, but it would be really interesting to see. It certainly would be gratifying to see as, you know, following, writing about a team that has been in the Western Conference in all of these stacked playoff races over the years. But, yeah, I mean, I think I agree back to my original question about if Cleveland and the Warriors make it back. I think Cleveland do make it back for what is round four.
Yeah, yeah,
I think
it's going to
be
round
four. And I want to say there will be a little more drama, but honestly, there was drama between Golden State and Oklahoma City a few years ago. There's been drama in the Eastern side several times because Cleveland, you know, has kind of coasted and had their struggles in, you know, well-documented way in the last several years, but ultimately always been able to get there. I think they'll be able to get there again. I'm certainly not going to be betting against them. Just the idea that you have LeBron on a roster of competent NBA players, I think it's hard for other teams to beat that, especially teams like Boston and Toronto that I just don't think have that much top-end talent, or at least as much top-end talent as they'll need to be able to do that. And I think Cleveland was at a place going into the trade deadline where I really didn't feel that way because I just didn't think they were a competent team of NBA players. I didn't think that they had the guys that they needed to have to even be decent. Like, if you took LeBron off of the Cavaliers pre-trade deadline, this is a 15-win team maybe. Like, they just were not very good, especially with how Isaiah Thomas played when he came back. You know, Kevin Love was the only good player on the team, really. But just the guys they got, I'm a big George Hill fan. I think Rodney Hood helps a lot. Obviously, Larry Nance Jr. has been a totally transformed player in the last few weeks. So, yeah, I think Cleveland gets back as well. I think it's going to be fun. But, yeah, I think we're getting Cavs Warriors around four.
Yeah, and I think the Warriors probably, you know, wreck that a little bit. Lucas, let's wrap it up on this. What does a win for the Clippers mean for Friday? What does them beating the Cavs mean for them?
Oh, yeah, I mean, we kind of got a little bit away from this game. I forgot that.
No, I mean, look, the game.
That
look,
we were even game
yeah,
for
yeah, yeah. I mean, look, game stuff is, like, sometimes the least interesting thing surrounding these teams, and I think all of this coalesces in a way that it provides really good context. Because I, like you, would like to see 1 through 16 seeding, because I think it just would be a better playoffs. You know, I also just think you're right. Like, we might not see it. I think we're going to see some kind of change, but I don't know if it's that. But I think thinking about where we're at right now, the Clippers seem to have, this is my take. I think the Clippers have more on the line in the short term than the Cavs do, but the Cavs still need to look good in some way, I think, to kind of keep their positive vibes going.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's interesting in the super short term is, you know, how important Friday night's game is. I think Friday night's game is more important for the Clippers than for the Cavaliers. But just in terms of this season, if things don't work out for the Clippers and they make the playoffs, it isn't that big of a deal, because if they miss the playoffs, they'll have two lottery picks. They've got, you know, a fairly young roster. They've got guys on manageable deals. They have pieces, you know, to move forward. 8th seed versus 14th pick, not a big deal for the Clippers in the long run right now. In terms of Cleveland, obviously this is like, this could be the last year of LeBron, or depending on how well the Cavaliers do, could determine if it is or is not the last year of LeBron. So that's, you know, monumental. But yeah, I mean, I think this game is huge for the Clippers, especially because they lost that game to New Orleans. I didn't mention it earlier, but so one thing about the Clippers, their March is kind of split in half. In the first 2 weeks of March, the Clippers have 6 games, four of them are against lottery teams. The other two, the game they lost the other night to New Orleans, and this game against the Cavaliers. The second half of March, they have nine games. Seven of those nine games are on the road. Eight of those nine games are against playoff teams. It is a brutal, brutal stretch. They've got Houston, in Oklahoma City back-to-back. They've got in Minnesota, in Milwaukee back-to-back. Those are just two really, really brutal back-to-backs, and they're really close to each other. They're within, like, a five-game in seven-night stretch. Like, the Clippers actually have a 5-7, which I thought wasn't even a thing in the NBA anymore. But, yeah, it's so I think this game against Cleveland is crucial because what I said kind of heading into March, heading out of the trade deadline, the All-Star break, was that the Clippers needed to go, like, 5-1 or 6-0 in this first stretch of March to give themselves a little bit of a buffer, you know, assuming over the course of the next week, if the Clippers can beat Cleveland and then they play Orlando and Chicago, if other teams pick up a loss or two in that stretch, the Clippers have a little bit of a buffer when they go into these really brutal games in Houston, in Oklahoma City, against Portland, in Minnesota, in Milwaukee, in Indiana, in Toronto. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And I think they're going to need a little bit of a buffer. I think if they lose games like the game they lost to New Orleans, the game they lost to Cleveland, they're going to have a hard time making it up, and they're going to fall behind in this last stretch in March. And then, you know, they're kind of taking – right now every team in the West is in a position, I think, where they control their own destiny, because there's enough games left that a one- or two-loss margin with head-to-head games, you're going to have a chance to get in, every team in this 3-10 slot. The Clippers losing – I think the Clippers could be on April 1st after this brutal March in a position where they don't control their own destiny anymore. And against Cleveland, which, you know, no offense to the Cavaliers, I think versus Cleveland right now is an easier game than in Houston or in Oklahoma City. This is the kind of game that I think they have to win to just have a good start to March and not put themselves in a position where they have to do something so huge at the end of March or something so impressive or unlikely to stay in the playoff race.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, that sounds right. I think for the Cavs, I think it's just a good performance going away. I think they would like the win. I think they want to pick up the games that aren't against the lead of the elite in this trip. I mean, they played, I think, Denver and Portland and LA are all good, solid teams, but they certainly, I think, would like to at least win two of those three to kind of feel good. And I think just seeing how they look will be interesting. See what kind of rotations they use. Ty Lue has not sucked anything necessarily consistent. And it'll be interesting to see, too. This is a game Ty Lue's coaching against one of his mentors, someone that he kind of, I think, is, you can see the influence of Doc on him. He's I think, tactically better than people realize, but he's also, you know, someone who is more kind of isn't super planned out. He does things kind of based on feel, and I think it'll be interesting to me if I notice some of those things that they coach similarly for whatever reason in the game. That's something that's sometimes hard to do on a first watching, but I'm kind of curious to see if we see some similar strategies from two guys that are, you know each other pretty well.
Yeah, and on that note, that Cavaliers Nuggets game actually just tipped off, I believe, so we should probably wrap it up. Go Cavs, beat the Nuggets, lose to the Clippers.
These Nuggets jerseys, by the way, not a fan of these jerseys.
I'm not sure what they look like.
These Nuggets jerseys are the blue with like the lot of neon yellow on the shorts, and the Cavs are wearing their bad gray jerseys. So this is just like an aesthetically ugly basketball game, jersey-wise. Not a fan.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, the Cavs gray jerseys just need to go. They're like 1-6 in them, and they're awful. The Land is a fine name, but that's a bad jersey.
Yeah, the Cavs gray jersey is a bad jersey. I know what that one looks like. I can't mentally conjure up a picture of the Nuggets one that you're talking about. But
yeah, but Locked On Cavs, Locked On Clippers. Read Fear the Sword. Read Clips Nation. Yeah, Read Clips Nation. Read SB Nation, and check out our podcast. Find us all on iTunes. Find me on Twitter at CWMWrites.
And find me on Twitter at Lucas J. Han.
Lucas, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Chris.
Okay, everyone, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Chris Manning, once again, of FearTheSword.com and the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. That's going to do it for today's episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. Hopefully the Clippers can get a big win tonight against the Cleveland Cavaliers. But as always, thank you guys for listening to the show. If you have any comments, questions, or feedback, you can hit me up on Twitter at Lucas J. Han. You can email me elhan.clipsnation@gmail.com. Make sure you are reading this weekend the Clips Nation blog at clipsnation.com to stay up to date on everything going on with the Clippers and the Western Conference playoff race, as well as following the Twitter there at ClipsNationSBN and liking Clips Nation on Facebook.